I'm Tom Lounges. This is Midwest Beat. You're listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Or perhaps you're streaming somewhere else in a much more exotic, warmer spot than Northwest Indiana via our stream at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Wherever you may be, I hope you'll stay with us. We've got a great show today. Gypsy music. What is it? We'll find out. We've got a great group called The Trouble Notes, and they're performing at Theater at the Center in Munster at 1040 Ridge Road. I'll tell you more about the show, but first, I think, as we often do here at Midwest Beat, we should let the music do the talking. This is The Trouble Notes. Catalonia Calling. That's interesting stuff there. That is one of those kinds of musics that you just can't really put your finger on. It's got elements of so many different things. And we're going to try to define it a little bit, although music is like any art form. It's subjective, and it is what you think it is. They're called Gypsy Music, but we'll find out what they call themselves. We've got Bennett with us right now, Bennett Servin. He is the violinist of the group. Bennett, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hey, Tom.
When I hear the term gypsy music, I think of that campground scene in the old Wolfman movies, you know, where the gypsy violinist is in the wagon, he's playing the violin.
Sure.
And you have a little bit of an element of that, but there's so much more. I can hear some rock. And you even have a little bit of a heavy metal feel in some of the songs.
In some of them, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the classification gypsy music is totally off, to be totally honest. I think we call ourselves World Fusion, and that's how we've been classified for at least the last few years, because there's such a fusion of elements. Gypsy music is a piece, and you can hear it in some of the songs on the record as well, but, you know, we go from classic to klezmer to Irish to, you know, it's really like travel music, and that's kind of the whole point. We've done quite a fair bit of traveling, and we always try to take little bits of different traditions and put them into our songs.
Okay. Now, you are based, correct me if I'm wrong, you are based now in Berlin, is that correct?
Berlin, Germany, yeah. That's my address, yeah.
Wow. Now, you're...
When I'm there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're touring here. You're going to be performing October 26th, about a week from now, at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts at Theater at the Center, 7:30 p.m. show. This is your first time there, I believe. Have you played Northwest Indiana much? I know you've got roots here, and we're going to talk about that in just a bit.
Yeah.
But have you played as the group here anytime recently?
No. In fact, there was... in 2014, we also did a concert at the Center. But it was at the very early stages of what we are. We found our identity a lot more since then. Obviously, it was 4 years ago. But we had come back, or we had come over, because we were doing a support slot for America, the band America. So, yeah, Little Horse with No Name. And that was pretty cool. And so while we were here doing that, we had an opportunity to play at the Center, and we did kind of a small local concert then. But this time it's much more, the show is much more developed and mature, if you will.
Okay. Now, what was that show like with America? That seems like an odd pairing, but yet at the same time, it seems like a good pairing.
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, how can I say this? It was pretty surreal. For us, I think the most interesting thing, you know, these guys, they've been around for a while. They're absolute legends. But what was really cool was to see how they worked as a group, actually. You know, that... they had the way their team was, you know, we kind of learned a little bit from them, because for us, you know, we were only about a year into our journey together.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to kind of go to school on some of the things that they were doing, because they do so much. They manage themselves basically now. You know, as they've gotten older, they've learned a lot from the business, how to kind of manage themselves. And so they've, taken a lot of those responsibilities back on. They still do 100 shows a year, and they're super nice and genuine guys as well. So it was like just to see them and understand kind of how they've matured and taken on their role. I think it was inspiring for us to kind of learn from them.
Now, speaking of 100 dates a year with them, with America, how many dates on average do you guys perform? And as I mentioned, you're based in Berlin, Germany. You play, obviously, in the States. You play worldwide from what I'm looking at on your calendar. Mm-hmm. You're playing all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're up at that. This year, I think we cracked that 100 number. We did. And then the years before, it steadily went up because, you know, I mean, I'm sure that... when we first started, we were doing a lot of stuff in the street. So it was a lot of street music and traveling and really directly connecting with people in streets. And mostly it was in Europe at the beginning. And then as things have kind of grown for us, we've been able to do a lot less in the street. We still do it when we can because we enjoy it. But yeah, the concert number each year has just steadily gone up. And this year, I think this year and last year, we cracked that 100 official concert number.
Wow.
But I mean, if you would count the street shows as well, it exceeds that by far, because sometimes we play two, three times in one day. You know, we do a street set somewhere to promote a concert later in the evening, and then there's like a, you know, perhaps a radio performance or something like that. So, I mean, you can have 3, 4, 5, 6 hours in one day that you're playing, you know.
Wow.
But we love it. That's it. It's the motivator. It keeps us going.
Now, you are a trio along with the guitarist Florian and percussionist Oliver. How did the three of you get together? And what is it about this particular chemistry that has succeeded so well?
We started, so the group started in New York City. I was living in New York. I had a job. I was working at a hedge fund. I was a finance guy. And music was kind of an escape. And one day I decided that I was just going to go for the escape. So I left the job and packed up what I could into a bag, took my violin, and I went to London. And within about 6 weeks, that's where I met Ollie, because Ollie's a native Londoner, so he's actually from London. And we had a good chemistry playing together, and he was also in a similar situation where he was kind of felt tied down by the city, felt kind of like he wanted something more, but didn't have the right people to do it with. And so I kind of told him, well, I'm going to Ireland in a week. If you want to be on the plane, this is my flight, you know? And he went for it. And so we traveled together. And there was a third guy that was with us as well, a guitarist, and he ultimately met an Italian girl while we were traveling, got married, and now has kids and everything like that. So he stepped out, and when we were in Berlin, we met Florian. So Florian was the third one to join us, the guitarist, and that was in 2000. He joined officially in 2015.
Well, you just kind of blew my mind there when you said you were a hedge fund guy in New York, and now you have this bohemian, free-spirited lifestyle. Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum.
Completely.
How did that shift in the dynamic of your lifestyle, how long did it take to actually embrace that? And what's your mindset looking back now at the 9-to-5 kind of drudge life that I imagine hedge funds
people
have?
It was more like 9 to 10,
wow.
In the morning until 10 at night. I never wanted to really do it in the first place. I mean, I did, of course, you know, but it was more of like I was proving to everyone else that I could, and it wasn't, I wasn't doing it for myself. And so, you know, I worked there for a few years. I got really caught up in it. Of course, I was, you know, always at my desk, always working, always trying to get ahead and, you know, move up the ladder. And, you know, I very much got consumed by the rat race that is New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And, music was the thing that I would kind of allow, like, escape from. So sometimes I would bring my violin to the office, and I'd get out at 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night, and I would take that violin and I would go into the subways and I would go play.
Wow.
You know, open a case, play, and just play to kind of have a release, you know? I dropped the jacket and I took the tie off. I took the tie off, you know, and that's, there's a reason why our album, the studio album, is called Lose Your Ties. It's exactly about this theme, because the tie was a symbol for me. It was something that was holding me back from something that I really wanted, which was to travel and play music and connect very directly and honestly with people.
On that note, let's play that song. This is the title track. This is Lose Your Ties. We'll talk some more with Bennett on the other side.
Thank you.
doing something that so many of us wish we could do, lose our ties, and just step out onto the Bohemian Highway and enjoy life for what it is. Making music, traveling, that's what my guest, Bennett Servin, has done. That's Lose Your Ties, the title track of the latest album by the Trouble Notes, his group, a trio that is coming to town October 26th at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts. They're playing at Theater at the Center, a beautiful venue. It's a kind of semicircle, about 400 seats, not a bad sight line anywhere, and the acoustics there are brilliant for this style of music. The album Lose Your Ties came out in early 2018, so it's maybe about 8 months out now, is that correct?
That sounds right, yeah. In fact, it was recorded almost a year before that, which is crazy, but we took our time kind of getting it everything prepared to release it because we did self-release the album.
You have released other EPs before this one. How long have you been recording and releasing music?
The first recordings that we did was at the end of 2013. Those were kind of like demos, and it was kind of like every year we recorded something. But you know, in some way, it was a lot of those old ones we don't have available anymore. So the people that bought them on CD or whatever, you're the only ones that have them. And the reason was because we just felt that, you know, it was kind of, each one was kind of a step to where we are now. And so some of those very songs that we were recording in 2013, they actually appeared on, you know, some of the more recent records from the last 2 years, but in a much more finished way.
Mm-hmm.
Because our music was kind of always it still to this day, it lives and breathes. You know, if you go to a concert of ours, if you go to two concerts, you'll never see the same show.
Right, right.
I mean, you'll recognize all the songs, absolutely, but, you know, they're always a little bit, something is a little bit different because we like to, you know, let the music breathe and live, you know, and get inspired by the place where we are when we play.
Let's talk a little bit about the writing of the material. What is the chemistry with the three of you? Do you all throw your ideas into a pot and come out with stuff like this? Do you primarily, as the group founder, do you come up with the songs and then let the guys flesh out their parts? How does it work within the group?
Yeah, I think actually the latter is the way. There's a couple exceptions to that rule, but the latter has been the most common way. So normally what happens is I come with an idea or a pair of ideas from somewhere that we've been or something that happens. You know, like for example, when we're traveling, every once in a while I get inspired by something and all of a sudden like a song just kind of manifests. And what's interesting is, you know, when I hear the song, it's actually a near finished product in terms of how I hear it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when I come to the guys, I say, you know, this is my part in that song and this is kind of the direction that I want it to go. And then they put their own fingerprint on it. And that's when it kind of takes our style. So a lot of times the way I heard the song is not what the finished song is.
Okay.
Because they then put their own fingerprint and their own voice on this starting point. So in most cases, I've provided the starting point and then they've brought their personalities and their talents in to make it our group identity.
Now, you are the violinist of the group. I've never known anyone to say, I write songs on a violin. Most people write on a guitar or a piano. Do you write on a violin?
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone say that.
Well, I write melodies, right? So if you write a melody, I mean, most times you can, you know, because most of our songs follow kind of I don't want to call it a pop structure, but it is a pop structure. And you know, what we try to do is we try to take complex themes and we try to boil them down in a simple way. So the music seems complicated, but it's designed to be very digestible for everyone. You know, because I think sometimes, like, for example, if you listen to jazz with the counting and with the key signature and time signature changes and everything, it can become very complicated for the listener and people get kind of turned away by that. So we try to keep, even though there's a lot of complex themes and there's a lot of notes in some of the songs, I mean, they really, you know, there's a lot going on, but it's done in such a simple way that, you know, your average listener will understand. And I think when you do it that way, you know, when you have a melody that's written around four chords, you can basically already know what those chords are. So you don't actually have to play them on a guitar. You can play the melody and say, okay, this adheres to these four simple chords. Now we can slightly alter the chords and make different changements, and you can use that as a starting point.
We're listening to the music of the Treble Notes. They're coming to the Center of Visual Performing Arts in Munster, October 26th at 7:30 p.m. We're speaking with Bennett. He is the violinist of the group, and he's got Northwest Indiana roots, and we're going to talk about that after this next song. This is Ghosts of the Red Sand, and this is my favorite on this album. We're going to find out about his Indiana roots after this. Ghosts of the Red Sand. That's music by the Treble Notes. They'll be performing October 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Theater at the Center, at the Center of Visual and Performing Arts at 1040 Ridge Road in Munster. That song, my favorite of what I've heard thus far from the group. It shifts kind of like the Red Sand that it's named after. We're hearing some metal in there. We're hearing tango. We're hearing Middle Eastern. And it all kind of mashes together into a very beautiful complex song, and we're speaking with Bennett from the group right now. Bennett, tell us about that song and the different elements.
Are you familiar with the parable of the ring from Nathan the Wise?
I am not.
Nathan the Wise, Nathan, he was a German author, and he wrote a book. In fact, the book is called Nathan the Wise, and the parable of the ring is a story about the three monotheistic religions and how God, in this case, this father had three sons, and he made three rings, three copies of an original ring, and gave it to each one of his sons. And it was supposed to represent the three monotheistic religions of our day. And this song is meant to be a musical representation of that song, that basically these three religions, while they should be in harmony with one another, for whatever reason, we find there is this ever conflict that's taking place in the sands of our world. And so what we tried to do was we tried to take different elements of Western music, different elements of klezmer and Jewish music, and different elements of Arabic music, and mix them together into one song to show how they could kind of be this harmonizing dance of the dead. So that, you know, apolitically, I have to keep it very clear, regardless of what you think politically, that our goal was to say, you know, there are innocent people who are losing their lives because of this kind of ever-raging conflict, and at what cost do we let that continue?
Right.
And that was kind of the point of this song, was to mix different styles from those three cultures and show that they can actually work together and quite beautifully in some ways.
That song, I could listen to that over and over. And, of course, I don't know if you've done a video for that yet, but the visuals that could come from that, pretty amazing.
So we did actually do a video. You can see it on YouTube, and it was shot in Paris. And we took that theme a little bit and used very, very, very qualified dancers to represent the three different cultural differences. And it had this kind of dance of the dead where beautiful, harmonizing, but at the same time fighting with one another. And the musicians, us, were very frustrated that each one of our dancers could not live in harmony and continue to fight with one another until the end of the song.
Wow, I'll have to check that out. You do have some different videos up on YouTube. We're gonna feature a song that is the official video coming up in just a little bit, the Grand Masquerade. But yeah. I did want to talk, as I mentioned on the other side of that song, about the fact that you are rooted in Indiana, I believe Northwest Indiana. Where are you from originally?
So I was raised in Munster, Indiana.
Oh, so this is a homecoming.
Yeah, man. I went to Munster High School. I graduated in 2007. My family still lives there, and it is very much a homecoming. And it's absolutely the reason why we're there in the first place. So I think it adds only a special level of excitement to this show, because there's a lot of friends and family and beyond who will be in the audience, and so it gives it just that little extra oomph from us that we need.
So in 10 years, you've gone from being a Munster Mustang to being an international music sensation. That's a pretty big accomplishment for one decade.
Yeah, thank you. I don't see it that way. I think we still have a long way to go, but I'll take it. It sounds nice.
Now, tell me about your roots. I understand you were kind of a child prodigy. You started very early. Was your instrument always violin?
Yeah, I started it. I had 1 year before violin. Like, I think my mother always wanted the kids to be what she calls gentlemen and scholars. And so when I was 3 or 4 years old, she told me that I had to play a musical instrument. She didn't care which one, but I had to play, and then I could pick. And for whatever reason, I chose violin. I don't really know why. I think that it had to do with maybe, you know, I was brought to a concert where there were violinists that were playing, you know, and I just liked the instrument, and I said I wanted to do it. And when I was young, I was really into it. And then, of course, during my teenage years, sports consumed my interest. And so I focused more on that than on the music. And I think most people that knew me never would have thought that I would have gone on to, you know, make this my life. But it became a creative outlet as time went on. The skills were there from the young age, and once I figured out that I could use it as a creative release, which when you're studying classical music, you don't see it that way. You see yourself more as a machine, as a conduit for someone else's creativity.
Right.
that when I saw that it could be creative, that I could write, that I could do more with the instrument, perform, be exciting. And also when we perform, I get to sometimes throw the athletics in a little bit as well, because we jump around an awful lot. And so, you know, when I could kind of put all the things that I loved into the music, that's when I really realized it was something for me.
What sports did you play in high school?
Soccer was really my main one. I also played baseball as well. And in fact, I think I was a better ball player than I was a soccer player. But I really loved the soccer team. And so as time went on, I put my heart and soul into the team. I mean, that's always been something that's very important to me, is being a member of a team. You know, individual accolades are great, I was very proud of that team, because that Munster team, we were the first ones ever to go to get out of the regionals and go all the way to the state level. We didn't win, but we did something that no team in Munster soccer history before us had done, and I was so proud of the entire team for that.
Excellent. Did you pursue any music in your teens? Were you playing in any local bands or anything like that?
No. In fact, I mean, of course, orchestras. You know, I was part of the Northwest Indiana Youth Symphony. I did a lot of master classes, and I was also in the Northwest Indiana Suzuki School. That's where I started my training from a young age. And so definitely regionally, I was quite active in different music groups and as a soloist. You know, I competed in the Indiana State music competitions.
So we might have seen you with Kurt Muspratt at the Star Plaza Theater at one point.
Yeah, you have, actually, for sure. I know Kurt.
I used to go my to mom all and, of those.
My mother actually was the when she now she's working at People's Bank as one of the lawyers there. But before, she had like a period of time where she was, you know, staying at home raising the kids. And when that happened, she started to write grants for the Northwest Indiana Symphony. So she was very involved with the symphony as well. So, yeah, I got to know Kurt pretty well from that.
He is a very exotic kind of guy.
He's a crazy guy, and I love him for it. I love him for it. You know, I have long hair, but I wish someday that, you know, I could just stick my finger in an electric socket
and look like Kurt.
And have his hair. Oh, it's beautiful. It's something to be marveled at.
What was interesting about him and when he came to Indiana, I think he's from Wisconsin originally. I can't remember. Or Canada. He's from Canada. That he brought a freshness to classical. You were talking about how classical is kind of stoic and stuffy. You're doing other people's charts that have been written for centuries. Right. But he brought this freshness and added the contemporary pop feel and added themes like Star Wars and Batman and stuff like that to it.
Bingo.
That had to be very inspiring for a young musician like yourself. Because that was about the era he was at his peak doing that kind of stuff and reinventing classical here in Indiana.
Correct. Yeah, I definitely, the youth orchestra, we got to play some more contemporary music. And also in the high school, it worked its way into the high school. And I don't know if it was, you know, if it reverberated from him. But there was a director at the high school, Su Han. He didn't stay for very long, unfortunately. He was there for like 3 years. And then he got snatched up by Carmel. I guess they had a little bit more money. But he was excellent, directly out of Indiana University. And he also brought in a breath of fresh air at a time when it was really needed in youth orchestra. And I think he motivated a lot of people. Really a great guy. And for me also, he helped open my mind a little bit. So even though, like I said, you know, music was always something violin was something I was very good at, but I wasn't the most motivated of classical players. He kind of had a way of getting me to do more exciting things and believing in me a lot at a time when, you know, he was like, hey, you're really good. You need to play this. Like, just do it, and I'll show you how it can be exciting. And that helped kind of keep me motivated. And, of course, my teacher as well, Kamen Vachev, who's now, I think, the concertmaster in the symphony orchestra.
Okay.
And he was fantastic, always.
Now, you know, when you're a guitar player growing up, there's so many guitar heroes out there. And same with drumming and even bass to a certain extent. But when you're thinking of being a violinist, there's not a lot of lists that I'm aware of influences and idols to look up to and emulate. I'm a big fan of Jean-Luc Ponté from his Zappa days. And I had the opportunity to do some interviewing and some stuff with Rachel Barton Pine here out of Chicago.
She's good, too.
Also, like, took everything to the nth limit and reinvented herself doing heavy metal violin. And, of course, there's also the Great Cat out of New York that I had done some stuff with. Who, if any, other players as a young musician did you look to for inspiration?
I have to be honest. Yeah, I definitely met Rachel. I took a class with Rachel. And there were some classic guys that I was really into. I would say the only one is probably Grappelli.
Oh, okay.
But even so, it's a bit dishonest to say Grappelli, because my inspiration in music really comes from rock guitarists. And you can see it in the way that we perform and in the way that we play, that it's all the other genres of music that we listen to that is what inspired us the most. You know, that each one of us comes from, you know, a background of loving a lot of different styles. And so I think that one of the things that I kind of pride myself on is that I'm not actually trying to emulate another violinist. And you know, it's very much the desire was always to kind of I don't want to say reinvent violin, because I think that's ridiculous, but to take the violin and present it in a way that a lot of people are not used to. And that's something I definitely think that, as you know, as an individual, I've the feedback has always been exactly that. You know, I've never seen somebody do that on a violin, and that's what I want. You know, so it's the reason I play a 5-string electric now. I don't really play a classic violin, especially with this group, at all. And, you know, everything has been kind of there to break the mold and show that the violin can be much more than what the average person thinks it is.
All right. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. We're talking with Bennett Servan. Is it Servan? Servan?
Servan.
Servan.
Very good.
Just like it sounds.
And just like it sounds.
He is the violinist and founder of a group that's coming to Center of the Visual Performing Arts, the theater at the center. The Trouble Notes will be there at 7:30 p.m. on October 26th. They have a brand new album out called Lose Your Ties. We played the title track. There's a video out for that called The Grand Masquerade. And we're going to play the song, and then I want you to explain the video. It's rather abstract. And
It's that? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the video you're going to play.
Yeah. So this is Grand Masquerade. The Grand Masquerade, that's new music. It's off Lose Your Ties. The Trouble Notes are making it. They are a trio of international traveling musicians traveling back here to Northwest Indiana, Center of Visual and Performing Arts in Munster, 1040 Ridge Road, October 26th at 7:30 p.m. We have violinist, composer Bennett Servin with us, and he is a native of Munster. And I encourage my listeners to get on YouTube and look at the videos. If you love the music, you're going to love the videos too, because they add a whole another level, another element to the music. Yeah. And this one, Bennett, kind of blew my mind, because with the bird heads, I don't want to give too much away because I want people to look at it, but there's bird heads on these people, and I'm assuming that the ending is very dramatic. Is that the bird person revealing that they're no longer playing the masquerade, and the rest of them seem disgusted by it?
You got it. Yeah. So the video. Let's start with the video. The video was inspired, in fact, by David Lynch, a phenomenal director, and the director of this video. She's Italian. Her name is Laura Celenza, and she's a huge David Lynch fan. And so we're very good friends. We've done a lot of work together in Europe. And I asked her, you know, okay, will you shoot this video? And I explained the story to her. And she goes off on this David Lynch-inspired tangent. It's like, I got to do this one shot. Because, I mean, it's the artistic side of it, which is amazing, is that, you know, it's a fixed frame. The frame never moves. So it's literally like a play that you're watching in front of you for that 4 minutes or however long the song is. And the inspiration, in fact, is, you know, this is one of the songs that we wrote while in Berlin. Actually, the violin melody traces all the way back to Munster, Indiana. This one is a really, and I, in fact, I'm now making that connection for the first time, that it's one of my sister, when we played the song for her the first time, my sister's like, I know that melody. You were playing that when you were 13 years old. And which is true. It's very true. It was one of the early ones for me. And I guess it was me kind of already at that age saying, you know, that feeling like I was a part of the masquerade. The song, the best way I can explain it is that it was written in Berlin. And, you know, 40 years ago, let's go back that far. There was this, you know, wall that cut through the very center of Berlin. And, you know, What was going on frankly, both the west and the east side of the wall, but in particular on the east, was this desire to kind of re-engineer people's way of thinking. And so there was serious physical and political consequences for breaking the mold. For, you know, for example, if we're thinking something that was, you know, not in line with what the DDR wanted you to believe, it could have meant your life. And so people started to hide things about themselves. They started to lie. They started to put masks on to, you know, there's a great movie out there called The Lives of Others. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about East Berlin in the 1980s. And it's kind of like that, you know, that there's a character in the film who is an artist, and he's having these like kind of closed door sessions where, on the surface, him and his friends are like great, you know, party members, but behind closed doors, they're talking about all sorts of things that were considered, you know, that were not allowed to be spoken about in public because they were contrary to, you know, the social and economic engineering that was taking place in East Berlin. And so, you know, we feel that story kind of connects with everybody, that at some point in your life, you felt like an outsider, you felt like there was something that everyone else was doing that you didn't really agree with. And so rather than tell them, you just kind of put a mask on and smiled and pretended like you were, you know, in cahoots with the rest of the group, when in fact you were an outlier and you just didn't want to show it. And that's kind of the whole feeling of the song, as well as this kind of roller coaster of, you know, should I take it off? Should I not? You know, do I reveal am I honest with myself and with others about the way that I feel? And that was the theme that we tried to capture in this song.
Were those actors, or were the three that remain hidden with the bird heads, is that the three of you?
No, those are actors. Okay. They're all actors.
I was checking out some of the video stuff. And like with Ghosts of the Red Sand, it's a very violent, very bloody kind of video. Have you thought, because the music works so well visually, have you thought of doing more soundtrack work?
Yeah. So we've scored now 3 films.
Okay.
One of them was released this year in Germany, and it's done extremely well. It won a few awards for best documentary film, and it was great. And it's called Wenn Paul über das Meer kommt, which means literally when Paul came across the sea. And that one is the story of a Cameroonian refugee who makes his way to Europe, and it shows all the trials, the tribulations, and also his mentality when crossing borders and doing things that's now become a very, very hot ticket in Europe. And so we scored that film. We've also scored one now. We scored an Italian film recently, which hasn't even been released yet, about the Caracci family, which was a very famous artistic family. And the director, she sort of likened the Caracci family to us and said, you know, there's no better band that I know that could do the music for this film than you guys, because, you know, you are them in the present day. You know, this kind of nomadic family in Italy that walked through very many circles, that painted murals for the most famous of people, you know, but yet at the same time, they always stayed very close to the people, which is something that we really try, you know, that no matter where things go for us, you know, we always want to be very approachable, very, very much on the ground with our audience, because we take a lot of inspiration from them.
Right. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Bennett. We'll see you,
Tom.
October 26th, doing Northwest Indiana Proud. And again, the album is called Lose Your Ties. I do encourage listeners of the Lakeshore to please get on at YouTube and enjoy some of these creative videos.
Cool.
And go to the show, October 26th, 7:30 p.m., Theater at the Center, 1040 Ridge Road. We're going to leave with, I think it's pronounced Boda?
Boda.
Yeah. Boda.
Boda was the imaginary friend of Kurt Cobain.
Oh, okay.
So this was a song. The guitarist actually is the one that came up with the original starting point for this song. He's a huge Nirvana fan, grew up in Germany, and we always joked with him that this was kind of like, it started as like a Nirvana unplugged session, and then it gets crazy. So... that's the inspiration for the song.
All right. Keep up with the group at thetroublenotes.com. You can also find them on Facebook and I imagine, Twitter, The Trouble Notes, also there, and on Instagram, all the usual
Spotify.
Places.
Got it.
All right. Thanks again, Bennett. We appreciate it. Let's play some music.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
This is Boda.